Why do you say that, Father? You aren't afraid, are you?
No. But I respect some of the superstitions of others. Often they are founded in fact.
Broadcasting live from our Sanctum Sanctorum in Venice, California, this is the Sixth Sense Society. I'm your host, Krista, here with our producer, Michael. And today we are excited to have a wonderful panel of women on the show to talk about the magical body of the woman. And with us today is Sandra Inman, who is a spiritual mentor and coach, Wiccan practitioner, founder of Mystery Witch School and author, and Lynn Mavius, ceremonial magician, occultist, artist, writer, Thelemite, and YouTuber. And we're hoping to have Brandi Williams on. She's not quite here yet, so hopefully she'll join in. And she is a Wiccan high priestess, pagan magician, tantric yogini, and author. They have all been on this show before, both as individuals and also sometimes as guests on our annual magical special, which is this is what it is. So we're very excited to talk about this topic today. But before we get started, Michael has a few announcements.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. And it's really great to be here again, especially with such incredibly intelligent and talented ladies. So I'm super excited about this show. October is around the corner. We have all kinds of our paranormal guests, of course, in keeping with the season, from Mystic Mitten and Holly's Haunts, and some people from West Coast Taps are due up. And so all kinds of cool stuff. Get all the information on our website about the show, sixthsensesociety.com, S-I-X-T-H, all spelled out. And while you're there, buy us a coffee on Ko-Fi. But most importantly, go to YouTube and click like and subscribe. And that definitely helps us the most. And we're really happy about that. Don't want to take up a ton of time because we have so much to cover today. And don't forget, this is an extended special. So we're looking at least 90 minutes, and who knows, they may even extend a bit more if it's going well. So I'm going to take up no more of your time. So I'm going to kick it back to you. So take it away, Krista.
Great. Thank you, Michael. And welcome, Sandra and Lynn.
So thank you so much. Hello.
Yes. Hello. Yes. Thank you for having me again.
We're really happy to have both of you. And like I said, Brandi, we're hoping we'll join in. We're not sure what's happened. Hopefully everything's all right with her, though. So I did want to sort of mention just as a start that this idea for the show actually, I think, was seeded when I was in my 20s and I did a paper on witchcraft. And I read for the first time parts of The Hammer of Witches, which is basically a very famous a book written by these two guys, religious guys, and I have the name somewhere, I always forget their names, Henricus Enstitoris and Jacob Sprenger. And anyway, there was one thing that stuck out that women supposedly could do to men, and I was going to read this part. I remembered it from that time, and I even wrote it in a poem, and I wanted to read it because this is just so outrageous, and also because this book was taken seriously, and it's under the way in which they take away male members, and they meaning sorceresses and sorcerers. He uses the word sorceress because he wanted to use that instead of witches, but it's actually, I think, in this section about females. And so the quote is, as for what pronouncement should be made about those sorceresses who sometimes keep large number of these members being penises, 20 or 30 at once in a bird's nest or in some cabinet where the members move as if alive or eat a stalk or fodder, as many have been seen, and the general report relates, it should be said that these things are all carried out through the devil's working and illusion. Now, he does say it's an illusion, but the interesting thing is in the footnote, evidently, it actually, this particular story was a joke and during the time, and it was meant to be a joke. But this man took it seriously, that witches could actually, and there's other sections in there, but it just stuck in my mind as so bizarre. Like, even if it's an illusion, who would think of something like that? So that's what I wanted to say. That began my thinking about the power of women spiritually and religiously, and then exploring it myself both positively and negatively. So I thought it might be interesting to start off sort of like maybe a perspective on some of the historical ways that women have been portrayed because they are female, both again, I think, from a positive point of view and negative. So let's start with you, Sandra. What are some of your thoughts about that?
I think it's a love-hate relationship and it's not just coming from the male perspective or the patriarchal religions. It's also been something that women have internalized, and often we're our worst enemies. So there's this love-hate relationship with the feminine, and I think it's just a total misunderstanding of what the feminine is and a fear of the feminine power, because our power's a little unseen. And so a lot of it is about having to subjugate it or try and deny it. So I grew up Catholic, so I'm very familiar with the whole female sexuality being a bad thing. At least when I was growing up, it was seen that way, that women were the temptresses, women were the ones that had to be kind of the guardians of sexuality. And if a woman was equally as interested in sex as a male would be, then somehow there was something very wrong with her. And that's something that I could never understand, particularly as a teenager. And I just felt that was just so unfair, that our sexuality particularly has been demonized. And why is it being demonized? And of course, it's been demonized because of the power of it. But it's meant that women have not been able to fully understand our own sexuality spiritually in our upbringing for a lot of our culture. And so we have to then go and find that for ourselves. And that's what led me to the path of witchcraft, was that our sexuality was respected and honored, and the feminine was respected and honored in that path. But it's still a path of exploration. The feminine is being so denied us. Even with in the era of feminism, it's being denied us.
I agree with a lot of you have to say. What do you think, Lynn, when you think about some of the backstory of women's body and women's sexuality and magic?
Yeah, I think this is a fantastic topic. I was going to make the joke that I don't know about you all, but I have a basket of penises, but I'm just kidding. But, you know, my particular interest is, of course, in ceremonial magic, following this tradition through orders like the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, you know, Thelema, things like that. And the interesting thing is, when it comes to women and magic, they have always been a part of this. From the very inception of the central sacred holy book, the Book of the Law, you know, without, you know, Rose, this book wouldn't exist. But also, when we go back to the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, women, again, from the very inception, played a very important role in that, and as well as, you know, things like theosophy, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really interesting having this modern perspective on the role of women and what they've contributed and what they've done over time. I hear this a lot, not so much these days, but definitely when I was first starting out, and there was this idea that witchcraft is for women and the occult is for men. And I'm not sure how much you all have encountered that personally, but it's so false, right? Well, first of all, why can't you do witchcraft and the occult? But that issue aside, you know, women, in terms of their exploration and expression and what they bring to the table as far as magic goes, is so diverse and so valuable. And it always has been. And just now we're returning back to look on the historical precedent and the things women have done. And we're seeing that women have been writing. You know, it's just they've been writing in things like magazines, which aren't archived and lost with time. Women have been running magical orders. Women have always been there. They've had students. They've made, you know, tremendous artwork based on occult practices. Eiffel Calhoun comes to mind, someone I've been thinking a lot about. But yeah, I guess that's my perspective on this is, you know, we need to stop writing women out of the history of magic and the occult.
That's so true. And I remember when I first started reading more Deanne Fortune, and I mean, she calls herself a magician, and there's Florence Farr. There's like, and then that was one of the nice things about the Golden Dawn is it was the male female, you know, connection. And then you look at tarot decks, and I'm glad you mentioned Rose Kelly, because I remember coming across that story and thinking like, oh my God, it wouldn't have happened without her. She's so cool. Mm-hmm. You know, and that story, I know her story is being told more now. I mean, I think that's true of some of the other women in magic. So it's really true. Now, one of the things that I find fascinating myself is, again, looking at sort of the broader, longer history, is that at one point, women's bodies were worshipped because we gave birth. And that idea that it was very magical. And then along the way, the same things that were worshipped are demonized. And so I guess it does become a little bit of a, for me, philosophically confusing as to, I suppose there's not one thing that triggered this change in the perception of, I mean, you know, the goddess was in history was, is still powerful, but was really powerful, you know? And so you have to sort of say that, okay, what is it like about the body? I mean, is it because we can give birth? I mean, that is pretty phenomenal. And do we have these physiological things that we need to respect as differences, but they're neither better or worse. Like they're just different. You know, our hormone system is different. And I'm talking, of course, you get into transgender and that's going to be a whole nother thing. But what do you think of something, that idea of it sort of going sort of the pendulum, like you had said, Sandra, the love hate, you know?
I think we as humans have this going on all the time for all sorts of topics. That's kind of what's fascinating me at the moment, is that we do have this polar thing going on. It has to be one or the other, and we're always shifting from pole to pole in the extremes. We don't seem to understand the principle of rhythm, that it's probably better to be somewhere more in the middle. I wonder if it's because people sort of got into this spiritual mindset that paradise or the thing they were really wanting was somewhere other than in the physical realm, and that they were trying to escape the physical realm because it's so difficult here and there's a lot of suffering. And so a lot of emphasis, particularly with a lot of the more modern religions, and modern meaning over the last, you know, 2,000-3,000 years, focused a lot on the other world and the body and even the planet, and anything material became demonized and seen as being a bad, negative thing. And I think that may have a lot to do with it.
That's really, really good point. What do you think, Lynn?
Yeah. So when we think about these concepts like the divine feminine and the divine masculine, I do think things like childbirth, anatomy come to mind, especially with women. And I think that that's a part of the picture, but I think that the physical form isn't the end all be all. One thing that comes to mind from my perspective is the Gnostic Mass, which is the central public ritual performed by the OTO, or Ordo Templi Orientis. And we have a priest and a priestess. So very familiar with Wiccans. You know, a lot, we do have Wiccans show up like, oh, I've seen that before. So of course, Gerald Gardner did drive inspiration from the Gnostic Mass, but basically when we have a priestess, you know, she's representative of some of these other divine concepts. So I will pull out this bad guy. So this is the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, if you're familiar with the tarot. This is something I used to study, but you're probably familiar with the Way of Return or the Mind of God or whatever you want to consider this map of, you know, divine emanation. And the Gnostic Mass deals with these concepts of the divine feminine, the divine masculine. And then we have to ask ourselves, what do those mean? What does it mean? And ultimately, they're metaphors for this deeper understanding of returning to the absolute all and embracing both the divine feminine and the divine masculine. So when we have a woman as priestess, and of course, woman does include trans women, her physical form, you know, whether she's had a mastectomy, whether she's, you know, had, you know, is postmenopausal, like all of these things don't physically matter, because what matters it for the magic, in my opinion, isn't any of these physical qualities. It is the spiritual component and it's the metaphor. So a lot of people or some people, I should say, struggle to wrap their mind around how can masculine and feminine be a metaphor, and they don't get it. And I always say, think of it instead like transcendent versus immanent. And if that helps, and if that works better for you to understand the magic and what we're doing with this particular ritual and other rituals as well, then use that as a tool to engage with and understand and use the magic. And I feel very strongly about this, that a woman is not less of a woman if she can't give birth, if she's doesn't have breasts, you know, if she's had some sort of physical disability, you know, if she's wheelchair bound. And quite frankly, I love seeing that representation from our priestesses, you know, whether it's disability, you know, I love seeing a pregnant priestess. I think that's so beautiful. And I think all of our myriad of what it means to be a woman should be celebrated, especially in our magic.
Very well said. I think too that you could also add or argue that gender and feminine masculine are not necessarily the same thing. But at the same time, like you said, you can't completely ignore the gender. Like for instance, in my background, Tibetan Buddhism, the tantric tradition, it's a little confusing because some teachings say that it's slightly better to be in a woman's body. And then you have another teaching, it's probably Mahayana, I'm guessing, but I'm not sure, that say that you can't be enlightened in a woman's body. So to me, that everything you say, I agree with. But at the same time, we have had to deal with through the religious undertones of the fact that it has been made a big deal about. And I wonder, too, if there can be some merit to, for instance, maybe there are some practices, the female body, it's easier for them to do for some reason. And maybe some male practices, it's just easier. It doesn't mean they'll be more enlightened because I think there's so many different practices, you know, so it's not like there's something for someone everywhere. So what do you think about some of those thoughts, Sandra?
Just thinking back to the Buddhism, it reminded me of the story of Tara and how her response to that suggestion by that she was such a good practitioner that she was told that she couldn't. What a shame it is that you're in the body of a woman because you can't become enlightened. And her response to that was, "Well, I'm going to keep coming back as a woman until I'm enlightened, basically just to prove you wrong." So that's something that I found very powerful about the goddess Tara in that tradition. I think we come here to have experiences of those energies and how those masculine and feminine energies work within us, because we all have the masculine and feminine energies. And it's about finding what is actually really working for us in this life and having the experience of what those energies can bring to us in this life too. Yes, we do have more energy in certain aspects of life than others if we're more one way dominant than the other. And that can teach us a lot about, so for example, for women, we're more receptive. So females who have a lot more of a feminine energy, or even men who've got a lot of feminine energy, are working on experiencing what does reception mean? What is it like to be a receiver? What is it like to receive, to be able to allow yourself to relax and receive and work with that energy? How is that a power, and how do you make that and recognize that as power within yourself? And those who are exploring the masculine energy of go, 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 do, 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 being more active, what's that experience like? And when are we in those experiences, and how much does that experience take from you so that you end up having to go into the other experience to recover or be active in the world? So it's, for me, it's about playing with those active and receptive energies within myself and understanding what's more dominant within me. When it comes to me and the work that I do in the world, I'm in my active energy. And I find that if I'm in that too long, it really drains me and I feel very burned out. And I have to spend a lot more time being in that receptive recovery energy. So it's for me understanding, well, where's my balance with that masculine feminine energy within myself? And it's definitely more within the feminine. I have to go into the masculine in order to be in the world, but I can only do that for a certain length of time. So it's about exploring these things within ourselves, and even in our bringing that magical understanding of the principle of gender into our everyday lives and what we're experiencing in this life.
So in a way, you might naturally have a predisposition in your soul to be more one than the other, and that's perfectly fine. You know, it's sort of like the whole introvert, extrovert, and then all the variations of it. And instead of trying to necessarily force yourself to be a certain thing, there are some people that are super masculine by nature, including women, and some are super feminine by nature. And it doesn't mean you shouldn't work on the other, but it seems like you also, it's good to be yourself, you know, whatever that is. What do you think, Lynn?
Yeah, I really like what you said there, Sandra. I mean, that really resonated with me in terms of attuning yourself to what energies, how you're going about your day, what activities elicit different energies from you, and reinforce that, I think is a fantastic thing to keep in mind and another place to explore mindfulness in a bunch of different ways. To return what we were previously talking about in terms of something that might be easier for someone, you know, a woman or someone with a uterus versus someone who doesn't have those configurations. You know, I think back to the Book of the Law, which I already talked about, but I'm going to mention it again because it actually lays out which ingredients to use in incense, which then is used to make cakes of light for various things. Some of the classic rituals cakes of light are used is the Mass of the Phoenix, as well as the Gnostic Mass. So these ingredients aren't put directly into the cakes that are consumed, right? They're put in incense first, the incense is burned, and then those ashes are used to put in the cake. And the first ingredient listed, the most powerful one, is menstrual blood. And obviously there's not everyone can produce that, including some women can't produce menstrual blood, you know, whether they've had a hysterectomy or what's happening there. But then after that, you know, it's listed other things like semen, and it goes on. And so I think there are, at least in thalamic magic, some advantages to having a uterus, but that never stops you from doing the magic. And I think that's a beautiful thing to explore how you can interact with magic. And if you have that, absolutely explore that. But I hope no one's takeaway, you know, after reading the Book of the Law is that, I'm less than because I don't have this ingredient, because there's other options there. And
I'm glad you brought up the menstrual blood, because that's another one of those topics that it's seen sometimes through history as super powerful. And then also super, what's the right word? Women are dirty and you need to be separate. And I mean, the separate idea is a great idea, you know, and I think that's what the red tent movement's about is because you know, it is a very potent time, but in, I think, a powerful way. But I think that that's one of those areas that also has that sort of dichotomy. And sometimes it's viewed as, like in this case, very powerful, negative, and personally, now that I don't have one, I personally don't miss it, just so you know. but I'm glad I experienced it. I'm not. But that's part of the whole, the view of the female body being so, I mean, men's body is not, I don't know, was it ever viewed in any way disgusting, other than maybe in certain religions, all bodies and sexuality are disgusting, the way women's has been elevated, and it strikes me personally as a lot of projection. Mm-hmm. As it's the projection, like if you read the thing that's really fascinating about the Hammer of Witchcraft is so much sexuality in it, and the way the witch was, you know, stripped down, and men were also witches too, but it was more women than men, and he definitely seems to not like women in the Hammer of Witchcraft. They shaved the whole body. It's just very sexual, the whole thing. So I thought, did he have an issue with his mother? sister? I don't know. So
obviously he had an issue with his own sexuality, and projecting that, of course, out onto I guess the sex he was attracted to, which would have been women, I suspect. A lot of it's to do with our inability to be able to accept our own energy and our own, say, dominant feminine energy or dominant masculine energy. And when we can accept our own energy and learn to explore what the feminine energy is within us or the masculine energy is and how it works and not see it as the enemy, then we actually then change our perception of the other too.
Mm-hmm.
So when we can see the masculine within ourselves, the feminine within ourselves, mm-hmm. more dominant feminine energy in my case, if I can really figure out what that is and really be in my feminine, and the more that I understand the feminine in the true power of the feminine, the more respect and the more respect and even admiration I have for the masculine. So all of that male-female war thing that goes on, it sort of goes away because you're able to understand yourself. And when you can understand yourself, it's much easier to understand others.
That is absolutely true. And the more we are accepting of ourselves, the more we can accept other people naturally, even if they're very different from us. Though sometimes there are some differences that are a little tricky if they're just very foreign to you. Like I definitely have trouble with people that are super selfish. It's a little foreign to so much of the way I was brought up and just who I want to be. But I think that whole balance, I think what you were talking about, Lynn, earlier with the Kabbalistic Tree of Life is so much about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think seeing ourselves and others is truly a beautiful gift and a goal I think a lot of people should strive for. And to talk about, you know, people who haven't worked through whatever internal thing they have going on, I think the biggest indicator someone hasn't done the work, and whatever that means, I'm talking therapy, I'm talking magic, whatever they need to do to get to a place of stability, to get to a place of spiritual health, the biggest indicator that they're not at that point or they haven't done the work is they're bigots. And that bigotry, which I've experienced quite a bit towards women myself, it's going to express itself in a lot of different ways. I think when we talk about people like men in particular, in this case, who project whatever weirdness onto women, whether it's sexual dysfunction, whether it's whatever they're projecting, you know, it's not going to manifest in a guy being like, I'm a bigot, I'm upset at women. No, they don't do that. The way it looks is that book, right? It looks like, oh, women are demonic. Women are manipulators. Women are jealous creatures and selfish. And women are this, that, the other. And in our modern spaces, that looks like men bullying women. That looks like men purposely excluding women on the sole fact they're women.
Mm.
And you know that's happening when, for example, a guy you've never had an interaction with in your life, never talked to him, suddenly out of the gate starts attacking you because of you're a woman. Mm. And that's what it is. You know, it's one thing if someone interacts with me and like, oh, I really don't like Lynn, you know, she comes off as rude, or, you know, I really don't like, you know, the type of magic she does. That's offensive to me. Fine. Hate me for who I am and what I've done. Don't hate me because of my gender and my sex. And when you do, that's bigotry. And that's just a reflection of their own internal universe, which hasn't been sorted out, and their own internal problems.
It's an excellent point. It was something I wanted to talk about too, each of your experiences. And I also just read recently for a different show, I read this book called The Gift of Fear by Gavin De Becker. And he basically, he works to evaluate violence. He comes from a violent background with his own family. And so he understands violence in a way most of us won't ever understand. And he talks about fear in a very useful way, how it's a protective, and also the difference between fear and worry. But I think it sort of stirred up because of the statistics again, that it's still true that more women are killed in domestic violence throughout the world than men. Not that men aren't, but it's still a higher percentage. And then you break it down into sort of like Black women and Native American women, it's even way worse. And it's just a little, it's really sobering, because one of the illusions I think the magical spiritual community has is that we're evolving. And I don't see the evidence in things like that, where I think what you're saying, Lynn, the bigotry it should be seen if we were as a culture and certainly individuals are evolving. They always have been. And so it was very, you know, kind of sobering that to me, no matter what, it's still difficult in some ways to be a woman. And then looking at, you know, Black women even harder. And you just have to know it and you don't have to accept it. And you can still break through the ceiling. But I think there's a reality to it.
Mm. Absolutely.
Mm. And it's something I wish maybe there could be like a group of people to study how to really, really shift that perception, because it seems so sad. I mean, it's so sad that, you know, your domestic partner kills you. I mean, it's not what you, as growing up romantically, I was a romantic girl. Yeah. It never occurred to me that that would happen. You know, it's just tragic. And, but, you know, like I said, individually, women have always been, you know, Joan of Arc broke the mold. And when you think of what she did, it's incredible. I mean, she was a general. It's like without any training, and she was pretty good at it. So, but Sandra, what kind of experiences have you had similar to Lynn, and how do you respond to it yourself when you feel that you are being sort of targeted for that particular reason? Do you just let it go? Do you feel like it depends on the nature of the person and your relationship with them?
I grew up in a family with pretty much all women. So my experiences, I've had like a lot of experience of women actually internalizing the beliefs and kind of keeping women down, and particularly in that sexual sense, like our sexuality was demonized by some of the women that I grew up around and growing up Catholic, and that even the nuns and the way that they were. So my experience of women being treated differently has come actually more from women than it has actually from men in my experience. And I think that's simply because the women have been internalizing and believing all of what the, I guess, the religion really is telling them, and acting on keeping us down too. So it's not just coming from the men, it's coming from the females as well. And there are other religions too, which actually do promote the physical violence towards women if they don't do what their husband tells them to do. And there's women that would support that, which is unbelievable. But it's like the program. We get programmed so young and indoctrinated so young by our religion, the culture, family, everything. For some people, they just don't have the ability to question that. They're too afraid to question that. The fear thing comes back in. Mm. And there's a lot of fears there. If I question it, who will I become? If I question it, where am I going to go? If I question it, people are going to get upset. I'm going to be ostracized from the family, from the community. There's a lot going on there.
It's a really good point. And even in some of the research of the witch hunts, depending on the region, sometimes it was women more than men that were accusing women. So, I mean, it's definitely very, when you even go into the specifics of the witch hunts, it's very complicated. And I've had both experiences. I've had in leadership when I was leading a Buddhist group, it was an older woman that attacked me. And like, you know, trying to, you know, say all these things about me. And I had a good teacher. He kind of gave me some good advice how to handle it. And I often had men supporting me into leadership positions. But I've had very positive, like, women teachers. Like, my English teacher was amazing. I mean, I just incredibly supportive and really, really a great friend afterwards. So I see both points for sure. And in the end, we're all human beings. And that's important to remember. So there's certainly a valid point. And I think women, there are some women that had very similar experiences, Sandra, as you have. What do you think, Lynn, about women that are attacking of women? Are you similar with Sandra? Do you think it's internalized? Have you had that experience?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we do like to, as you said, we like to think of ourselves as more enlightened. But the truth of the matter is we're not. We're still living in the predominant culture, regardless of our religion or path or what we're doing spiritually. And that seeps in. It seeps into the members of our community, and it seeps into our subconscious as well. And that's where I return back to this mindfulness thing and how it's so important to question why you're doing something. Where is that coming from? You know, what is that, you know, all of that whole framework of mindfulness. But, you know, aside from working on ourselves, yeah, I mean, people are going to come into our lives and our spaces with their own internal baggage, with their own internal mess. And they may or may not have the skill set or the feasibility to sort through it, or may not even have the will to do that, right? Like, some people are perfectly happy, you know, terraforming whatever environment they walk into to be, you know, complicated, problematic, you know, hostile, because they thrive in those environments. And so I think ultimately this comes back to the question of how do you handle it? And I think, you know, a lot of people do a lot of different things, but I think ultimately the cost of being a woman in a space, there is one associated with it, right? And you have to decide whether what you're doing and what activity you're engaging in, is that worth it? And I, for me personally, you know, writing, creating, producing, the answer is always yes, it is worth it. It is worth getting the hate mail. It's worth disrupting the status quo to exist, because for every mean message I get a heartfelt thank you. Mm. I get a heartfelt, I didn't know women could be in ceremonial magic. I still sometimes get women say, I didn't know women could join the OTO. And of course, you don't have to join the OTO to do thelemic magic at all. Mm-hmm. But I think our paths and where we're going is so important to people, and visibility is important. And yes, I have encountered issues from men, women, mostly men, almost entirely men. But I just sort of look at it as a the ticket to ride, and I pay the price, and I, you know, put on my armor, which is boundaries and the ability to say no to things and block, you know, and protect my energy, protect my space, protect myself, and move on. Because ultimately, what a blessing it is to be here talking with you all. What a blessing it is to have any kind of voice or visibility at all. And I never lose sight of that despite the struggles.
Yeah, it's a whole new terrain when it comes to, at least in this particular period of evolution, where people that are magical can get out into the world much more easily, you know, because of social media. And that has been a great surprise. Like, I remember positively, like, wow, there's so many more people doing all kinds of things than I actually realized. And then that, and it's also been certainly, like you're saying, Lynn, there's a definite downside, because particularly the element of people ganging up on people and the fact that they can be invisible and be cowards, you know, not show who they are. But Sandra, since you really sort of see yourself as a very feminine person and putting yourself out in the world more, do you find that difficult at times for you? Do you think that the feminine and the more invisible can also be effective, though, in terms of drawing people in? Are there different ways to succeed in that way?
What I've learned is that I have more success if I tap into the feminine energy, particularly with males, than if I'm trying to be a man or do the masculine thing, because as soon as you go into the masculine energy, you're going into that competition energy, because it's a competitive energy. So what I've learned much later in life than I wish I had have is that finding the feminine power and standing firm in the feminine power, and not being afraid to be female or being afraid to be in that energy. And this is an energetic thing. So be in that space, that's that sacral chakra space. It actually has an invisible power, I'd sort of say, because people don't realize it, but women shine, women bloom, women have the energy to be able to light up a space in the way that flowers can light up a space. And when we realize we can tap into that subtle energy, we have a lot of power that people don't actually see. Like, you can see competition, you can see it the way that men do handshakes and the way that the masculine works. But with the feminine, it's much more subtle. So it's learning to work with that energy and to not be afraid of it and not to feel that I've got to go into my masculine and be like the men in that environment when I've actually got much, much more power if I actually step into my feminine energy and work with that. So that's something that I've definitely learned. And the shadow work too, the work that I've done on myself from a shadow work perspective, inner work perspective, totally, totally changes the game completely. Much less fear and much less bias in relation to that fear towards other people. If people behave in certain ways that are derogatory or, you know, trolling or anything like that, to me, I actually find it quite amusing. It amuses me because I can see the motivation for it and why they're behaving the way that they're behaving. Mm. And sometimes I can even see how I could be like that too if I had that same fear or that same issue. So it becomes sometimes like a bit of a game.
Yeah, I think I mean, I have sort of a strong assertive side, but I'm basically astrologically much more feminine. And I, particularly when I was younger, I was really quiet and I would blend into things. And so that was why I think I was drawn to the Eastern tradition. I often associate flow and Taoism and the way that works, the way the mind of the Eastern mind works more, that power with the feminine, that they have a natural like affinity towards it. And that's just my association. And I agree with you that when I try to describe the feminine, sometimes people think it's like too passive. Like it is a little harder to describe. It's better to illustrate it, you know, like, you know, well, it's where the water goes around obstacles, you know, and how water wears everything down eventually, even mountains. Mm. But I personally kind of see some of the Eastern practices. For me, it's easier to get into that space. It seems like they're comfortable, not to say they don't have the masculine too, especially some of the yoga stuff. But I guess it's all about, you know, your disposition again, you know, what you really feel comfortable with.
I think the feminine in Western culture anyway has been so demonized that in response to that, we've been forced to believe that the only way to be powerful is to be powerful in a masculine way. And exactly. That means we can't be powerful in our feminine energy. So we're trying really hard to be, you know, push, 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 go, 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 you know, do the hard handshake. Then you almost break the hand because you're wrestling for who's the more dominant. And it's kind of funny when I do handshakes with men, particularly the ones that have the really hard, firm handshake. It's like I make a joke about it. And I can get away with making that joke about it because I do that in my feminine energy. And so it's we're kind of forced to, well, our culture tries to say, you know, that's the only way you can be a powerful woman is to be go, 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 do, do, do. And then we burn out and wonder why we're not happy. And so we've got to learn to find this feminine. We've got to learn to find the powerful feminine again.
Yeah, I am so glad you brought this up. I couldn't agree more about this idea of embracing femininity, stepping into it, and in the face of a culture that is selling us a narrative that it's less than masculinity. And I think for me, in terms of embracing femininity, embracing that current, that's sort of an extension of enjoying things. I mean, this is very superficial. And so this is it's an iceberg, right? In terms of embracing your feminine energy. But at the very peak of the iceberg, the part you see is it's my exploration of makeup and clothes and dressing more feminine and enjoying those things, enjoying decorating the house, enjoying cooking. And, you know, below that is a lot of internal work going on to love that part of myself, because just like everyone else growing up in this culture, that was seen as bad or less than, and I really rejected it. You know, saw, oh, I'm, you know, I'm the girl who doesn't wear makeup and I love sports and all that stuff. But in reality, you can do both. You can love sports and wear makeup. You can embrace all facets of who you are, which I think is the point. So if makeup, for example, something silly like that speaks to you and that's something you love and enjoy, absolutely embrace that. That is not a silly, trivial thing. It's an artistic expression of you embracing your authentic self and who you are. And those are threads worth exploring and seeing where they lead. And in terms of like what the rest of my spiritual and, you know, magical life, you know, I do work with a 93 current, which is, you know, a more masculine solar phallic current. And so I think that does strengthen me and give me, it's very energizing. And I benefit from that. But at the same time, you know, when I made an altar, not this one behind me, but another one, you know, it's a moon goddess altar. And it was very intentionally so to invite that energy into myself and my life. And I always strive to welcome all forms of those energies into my life, but special attention to the feminine energy, because, you know, it's very quick to, I don't know, at least for me personally, it's very quick to brush that aside and not embrace that when, you know, it's so important to embrace that because it's a part of who we are.
Yeah, feminine energy isn't weak. And I think we've been sold the lie that what we associate with feminine, the makeup, you know, the flowy clothes and all of that is a weakness. And it's not a weakness. It's actually can be quite powerful if you're aware of the power that it has. It's part of the feminine is beautification. We go in and we beautify environments. So it's part of the feminine to love beauty and to create beauty.
I think that here I would differ a little. Only I do agree that the feminine is, to me, following a path of joy. And if you are happy hula hooping, and if it makes you happy to sew, but I actually do question the beauty thing, because we've been so forced to be beautiful in whatever that century says is beautiful, to the point where women have done dangerous things and still do. Because I certainly believe in like, I like my t-shirts. That's my thing. I like to find cool t-shirts and feeling good in your body, whatever that looks like. But it's hard sometimes to separate what the culture says you should do as a feminine person and what is feminine for that person, you know, including men. Men, and luckily, you know, that's changing. You know, you even see straight guys, you know, with their nails polished now. You know, that's common. It's not, that wasn't growing up. Yeah. They feel like, hey, I like nail polish, you know. So to me, it's all about just being connected to whatever that is without worrying what the culture says you should feel.
Well, the culture is separate. If you let the culture dictate what beauty is, if you let the culture dictate what the masculine and feminine is, if you let the culture dictate that, then that's when you run into problems with everything, everything in life. But the beautification is coming from the feminine aspect of oneself. So whether you're male or female, and the beautification is what you see as beauty and how you put beauty into your life.
Exactly.
And that when you're putting beauty into your life, whatever the beauty is to you, that's where you're tapping into the feminine side of your nature, whether you're male or female.
So if you're working as a teacher, or maybe in your case, Lynn, you're there to help other people that join for the first time, and you find them struggling with some of these ideas, both by watching or maybe they talk, what would your approach be to someone? Like, where would you start this conversation with trying to help them to find out, you know, what the feminine means for them and how it can be expressed for them? Are there things you would actually teach? Like, for instance, your case, Sandra and Lynn, like I said, just from you working so much with ceremonial magic, I'm sure you have a lot of rich experiences that you can share with people that haven't done the work you have.
I guess, you know, I will wrap this into my response to your question, but I do agree that it is really important to, part of the work for everyone is shedding the husks of everything society put on us, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we live, you know, tons of stuff is put on us. I sort of picture, you know, I don't know, like a backpack and then like a box. And then you, but part of the work is removing that. And as you're removing that, you also should be removing your response to that. So removing from a reactive phase, which is sort of what I was talking about. Like, you know, I was very reactive to this idea of what a woman should be and what's more valuable in society. And stripping away is the first part of then building yourself up. And you know, what it means to strip away is different for every person and what they need. And I think it's going to depend on where they come from, their background. So for a lot of people, you know, they are dealing with some religious trauma first, and you have to address that. And you could address that a lot of different ways, you know, through therapy, counseling, group therapy, shadow work. I mean, whatever the person needs, I encourage them, you know, to pursue that and start to ask the question of who I am. And that exploration can take a number of different ways if it's if they need to, you know, if they hadn't had the opportunity in their life to ask, to explore gender, sexuality, whatever the case may be, make some space for that. Try to see who you are and where that fits. And then from there, you know, once you're at a more, you know, pure state, you know, if you can think of that, then you can start to build yourself up and start to work on that divine integration of other things you aspire to be and do and who you are in alignment with your will. And that's a very specific concept that refers to thelema, is this idea of true will. And this idea that we all within us have a spark of divinity or as purpose deep within who we are, that if we live according to that, you know, we will be embracing who we are and who we are supposed to be. And that's a concept that ultimately only you can know. And that's only going to come from your work. I can't tell someone who what their will is. I can't, you know, give someone that gift of knowledge of self. But I always hope that what little things I do, whether it's my videos or some of my in-person communication and the work I do in my community, help someone along that path. And I can offer, you know, just little nuggets of wisdom to kind of help people along.
Well, just to sort of make a little comment about like who you are in the world. I don't know you that well, but one of the things I do know is that you're yourself, and you have a very, even from the very beginning, Lynn, you have a very distinct energy. And to me, that's already such an inspiration when you meet people that really are connected to themselves and they are doing what they love and enjoy. And to me, that always is inspirational. And it's a lot harder to maintain that even somewhat with an audience. You know, in other words, you're still, to me, I don't know, every time you've come across, I get this specific sort of persona that seems very connected and real,
Thank you.
and you
Thank you.
really,
It is.
you really enjoy what you're doing. And so that is a big, I think it's a big important thing for people just to do even that is huge in this
Yeah.
world, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you. Thank you so much.
Of course, you know. So where do you think it, you know, I was thinking about the idea of where this could be going in the long run, because there's definitely a lot more talk about the feminine and women's bodies, and yes, we've had some setbacks in our country with women's bodies and rights and things, but it does seem like there's more open conversation. I will say that, and there's much more, there's things that people would never talk about sexually before in public. And now we do. I mean, it doesn't mean we've solved it. But where would you envision either of you this conversation being like in 50 years? Let's start with you, Sandra.
Oh, I would like to think that you know it's just part of the it's just part of conversation of people's experiences, and it doesn't have any anything. We just our culture is just so crazy at the moment. It's hard to know where anything's going to go. But we're so hung up on things. And it's hard to imagine that we could have a conversation about anything without the hang-ups and the biases and the ideologies and everything coming into, and people's fear and having to hang on to their ideology because they're so afraid of the fact that they might be wrong, and that's just going to totally destroy their vision of what this simulation really is. It's hard to imagine that everybody could just be talking about things in their own experience without necessarily triggering somebody else or some kind of authority or institution hasn't come in to tell us what we can or can't talk about or what we can and can't be or what we can and can't do. I don't know whether humans are capable of having that real freedom. That's pretty negative, but you just see history and you see where we are now, and it'd be great to think that we could have, you know, open conversations about things, but things can go backwards. Things can change. So it's really hard to say where it's going to go.
What do you think, Lynn?
Yeah, I think we're backsliding right now. It sounds so dark. No, I have a lot of hope for the future. I am so encouraged by some of the things I'm seeing from Gen Z. You know, I absolutely love sort of that fire there, you know, that passion, that exploration, the questioning. I think that's fantastic. But then you look at sort of the other thing, at least in this country, in the US, you know, they did statistics recently on, you know, in terms of age, like who's falling for scams, and you think like elderly people would be the highest statistic. It's actually the age group of under 25, 18 to 25.
Wow.
Is the highest statistic right now of people falling for scams. And I think that this is a larger reflection of being bombarded with so much information and not a good way to filter that information. I think we are losing grasp on the value and the importance of critical thinking skills. So the ability to look at something and evaluate it, the ability to look at the world and evaluate it, the ability to handle tough conversations and tough ideas, I think that at least right now, especially from COVID lockdowns and whatever else, you know, you can point to the rise of social media and TikTok and, you know, short attention spans. Like, I don't know, who knows why this trend is occurring, but it is. And I see this reflected in other in-person and online communities. I think it scares me, but I'm also hopeful because, you know, while we're seeing issues with people not having critical thinking skills, we also, I don't know, I see that fire there also, and the humor and the joy, and I'm not entirely sure what it's going to look like in 50 years, but I hope, you know, we don't lose grasp of being able to have authentic conversations and have tough conversations. I hope we don't lose sight of the value of critical evaluation of everything, and that we can pick up banned books and read them and talk about them without a reflection of who we are personally, you know, or something like that. These things are important. And I actually toyed with the idea of creating more content around critical thinking and encouraging people, you know, so who knows where that goes. Pick up the idea that someone's watching. Yeah. Pick it up and run with it.
Yeah. The critical thinking. What scares me is that, well, here in Australia, the government are trying to push through a misinformation or disinformation bill. And it terrifies me because that's coming, for one thing, it's stopping free speech. And even if you don't like the speech that's, or somebody's ideas or ideology or what they believe, if you can't have the conversations, if you can't have that contrast, then our thinking gets funneled into one particular way of thinking and one particular way of being, because we're only getting one source of information, and that stops critical thinking.
Yeah.
You can't have critical thinking if you're not hearing various different parts of an argument. So, and I find that governments are becoming more and more tyrannical in that, and they're doing that here in Australia, and I think they may have already done that in parts of Europe, and they're doing it in the UK, and it's terrifying, because how do we think critically if the only information we have access to is what a particular group of people want us to have access to?
Well, I think it comes down to what you were saying, Lynn, too, with all the information we get, and I mean, I'm fortunate I grew up for many, many years without social media. So I still research a lot the old-fashioned way. I go to books. I go to the library. I love the library. I still love the mm-hmm. library. Because, you know, it just you'll see something like, oh, that looks interesting. And you know, it, there's something about we had to do that. So I have sort of a habit of doing that. But I think along with the critical thinking idea, which is wonderful, is also one of our the problems we're having, which you both kind of indicated, is communication. And that because of, you know, people breaking up over text and things, people not facing conflict and not knowing how to, because you don't have to. And I mean, we've always had trouble with communication, but it's even worse now because of the way we can do it and get away with it. We can get away with mm-hmm. so much. So I almost wish there was like communication schools. Like we learn how to, you know, I work on it a lot and I still come up against these things like, oh my God, I have no idea how to deal with this, you know, and it's a very hard skill because it evolves, mm. you know, you have different needs to communicate with different types of people. And so I think along with critical thinking, personally, I'd like to see some more advancement in communication arts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't think it's one of the things we're not taught at school. One of the many important things we're not taught at school, which we should be, is communication and how to listen and how to try and walk in someone else's shoes while we're listening so that we can try and get a little bit of an understanding of where they might be coming from, so that if you do want to propose another option for them to maybe think about, you can do it in a way that's actually going to make them more receptive to listening rather than immediately close off because they feel like they're being attacked in some way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think, you know, in terms of working on ourselves and developing this armor and understanding ourselves, I think it is important to develop this certain strength and faith in yourself, that you can enter into a conversation and come in contact with topics that are difficult, come in contact with people who are difficult. Hell, walking into a ritual or an occult space or, you know, a coven and being able to be like, wow, this isn't for me, and leaving and having faith in your own personal strength that you can remove yourself from conversations, from situations. I see this again and again, that people are so afraid to walk into spaces. I don't know if it's just me, but, you know, people like, oh my gosh, you know, some bad things happened in this particular group in the past, and I feel like I could never, you know, I'm interested in this ritual, but I don't want to actually engage with anyone in that group. And it's like, okay, if you're interested in the thing, again, this kind of returns back to this idea of true will. If there's a thread that's piquing your curiosity, you know, go ahead and tug on it. Check it out. Check out the group. Check out that book. Maybe you want to know what's so bad about the book, you know, and, you know, don't give money to those authors, but, you know, go to a library. You know, libraries exist for a reason. Libraries are always having banned book displays, and check it out. Read it. Fortify your mind and your soul and your body through knowledge and exploration. I mean, again, what's the worst that can happen? You pick up the book, you read some of it, like, wow, that's horrible, and you close it and you return it, right? You walk into the group of people and it's not what you bargained for, and you leave. And yeah, just, I don't know, I guess just encourage people to have that faith and that strength in themselves that you can remove yourself from things and explore Absolutely. Things without being damaged.
Absolutely. I've thrown books in the bin.
Yeah, same.
You know, I think, again, it comes back to part of, I think, all people who walk the magical path. It's about know thyself. And so mm-hmm. the most important place to start with any magical tradition is that work on ourselves, that exploration of who am I? What do I believe about the world? Is it true? What have I been told? What's going on inside my psyche? So that you can start to change the program in a way that's going to help you see more of what actually really is out there, rather than be blinkered by the conditioning and the programming that we've received from the adults in our world when we were growing up in those formative, you know, first 7 years of our life. And that's really, it's a very magical thing to do, this inner work. It's the greatest magic, really, because we have to have that understanding of ourselves so that we can start to perceive the world in a way that might be more real and then be able to embrace more of the actual other aspects of magic and understand more about the magical teachings. It's very difficult to do that if we're still caught up in our own little programming, particularly around fear. We're very driven by fear. There's a lot of fear programming around, particularly at the moment. And a lot of people are letting their emotions rule them instead of understanding that the emotions are a guidance system. They're not there to, they're not meant to be something that we're always acting on. They're meant to alert us to something going on. And then we go in and investigate whether what it is that we're feeling is actually real, really the situation, or whether it's just something that we're programmed to react to in a certain way. We're very, very emotive beings, and we have to learn how to understand and work with our emotions in a way that's productive for us, not reactive and destructive.
Yeah, I want to definitely respond to that. I wanted to mention something. Michael was saying that about know thyself, then also don't care so much what people think about you, which that whole people pleasing thing, which women have been cultivated to do. Let's at least I know I was growing up. Yeah. And even though I was an independent thinker, it is something that you, to me, I have to sort of be aware of as a woman, because it's sort of expected in, at least in a lot of cultures, they just expect you to do that, you know, that you're, and if you kind of step out of that, one of the things I have found by being very assertive, is it causes way more ripples than it should. I mean, I'll do something that I think if a man did, it would be no big deal. And I'm still really surprised by that. I'm like, I just asserted myself. I wasn't angry. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like, you know, a major thing. So that whole idea that, and I think as women, and the feminine, if you're particularly very feminine, and you step outside of what people think a feminine person does, which we could debate about, that'd be a good show. What is a feminine person? Because it doesn't mean you can't be assertive or you can't, you know, look a certain way, but you can still be very feminine. So
we're
anyway.
Never always in one or the other. We're not always in the masculine or feminine. So when we're being assertive, we're just being in that part of ourselves, that masculine part of our energy. And it's true. When a woman's asserting herself, she's a bully.
Yep.
When a man's asserting himself, he's, you know, he's an assertive guy, you know, that's, and that is true. That does happen. And it definitely does occur. For sure.
Oh yeah, that's definitely reflects my experience about being assertive, standing up for myself, having boundaries, saying no. You know, I maybe it's because the way I present myself, you know, is, you know, stereotypically feminine. But people are quite shocked when I do say no, when I do stick up for myself, when I set those boundaries. And that's so important. I hope we get to a place in human existence where people aren't shocked when women have boundaries and say no and are assertive, and, you know, we're people too, you know? So this shouldn't come as a shock that just because someone is in a dress or wearing makeup that they have an opinion.
I agree. Now, I did want to address something about the emotions. I really like how Jane Roberts, in, I always remember this from the Nature of Personal Reality, talks about how feelings, you must follow your feelings because they take you to the belief, and they're not good or bad. They're there to tell you what's going on. Like she's not at all like the new age people say only have positive feelings. And, you know, I try that. And then I have this eruption about a month later. That's so demonic. I'm like, it's like, no, this does not work. I just like to try things. Okay, Krista, I'll only think positive and I'll only say positive. Just see, does this really work? And no, it doesn't. And but I love that idea that they're not good or bad. They're just trying to tell you something. They're streams of energy saying, hey, why do you think everyone hates you? you know? Mm-hmm. So let's go look at the belief or beliefs, because sometimes it's very complicated, you know? Well, mm-hmm. you know, when I was a kid, I was bullied, or, you know, my mother always told me I'd be worthless, you know, whatever it is. And then once you recognize it, you then change the belief and you work on that. And that's where you get real transformation. I always liked the way she described it because it made sense to me.
Yeah, and that's pretty much largely the work that I do, particularly with the one-on-one coaching, is work that way. Our emotions are our guidance system, so we can listen to them for guidance, but behind every emotion is a belief or a thought or perception. And that's where we've got to look, is what am I thinking? Where is this emotion leading me? What's my subconscious saying to me? What's my ego saying to me? What's it jumping up and down about? What's it afraid of? Generally, it's always about some sort of fear-based thing. So if you can find that, then you have the opportunity to be able to change the program. I mean, sometimes we are correct. Sometimes it is a situation that we need to definitely be afraid of, but it's having to understand what is programming that is actually causing a problem, or what is it? Is it real? And the more that we understand and change our programs, the more we're able to react emotionally in a way that's more fitting to the circumstances and the reality of the circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this goes back to, I can't remember who mentioned it now, but someone mentioned the book, The Gift of Fear.
Yes.
And what a great book. I agree, you know, and also this sort of ties into this concept of true will, you know, whether or not that's something you subscribe to or a concept you find valuable or not. But, you know, our emotions, our fears, even what makes us happy and what we're curious about, I think that they are subtly guiding us to knowledge of self, and so that we may live in alignment with our true self and our true will.
Yeah, the whole concept of the true will is fascinating to me. And there's, I got this sort of a book about will, and I think it's going to be the next big thing in astrology with Mars. It's going to come, you know, Venus has been sort of dominating, you know, the evolution and the depth that they use. But the will and how important will is, because without, you know, especially connecting to the true will, just on a practical level, you wouldn't get anything done without will. You can you'd be a dreamer, and that's about it, you know, overall. But this whole thing that I struggle with, because I was extremely emotional growing up, but I'm also a, you know, critical thinker, and I still feel there's this demonization of women and emotions and feeling, to the point, like, if I cry, I tend to be a huge crier. Like, I just really let go. And I learned to do that. And also laughing. I learned, if you laugh too loud in public, people look at you. But it's very, very good for you, especially laughter. It massages your organs. When you really, I mean, you can go to levels you don't even know if someone listens to you and lets you laugh and you just keep going. I still find that that feelings, and maybe they're different from emotions, are still kind of demonized. And like, I want to be comfortable with all my feelings and just let them flow, you know, like, and yeah, maybe I'm not going to do anything about them, but there's still some that I'm like, ooh, you know, I don't want to feel that, you know? So it still seems like it's sort of held against you if you're a feeling woman, like somehow that's weak. You know, and I don't think it is.
I think the feeling side, because it's that connection to water, that watery energy. It is a feminine aspect of humanity and probably the animal kingdom as well. It has been demonized because feelings are so powerful. They're incredibly powerful. And also they can be very difficult to control. And our world has been for a very long time in a lot of cultures about trying to control and subdue people into being and behaving and doing particular things, and feelings going to upset the apple cart there. So there's this disconnect that happens between feeling, and so it's always supposed to be, you know, rational and being in that kind of mind, when even that is distorted too. So we need to have this understanding between feeling and rationality and how they can work together. Again, it's about bringing those energies into alignment. And the true will is is can be muffled by us not understanding ourselves, us not knowing who we are, not knowing why we're reacting and creating circumstances in our life that we could actually avoid by understanding our feelings and what's promoting those feelings, what the thoughts are behind the feelings, so that we can and actually enact our true will in the world. And I think part of our true will in the world is to learn more about who we are and to change the programs that we've been brought up with so that we can create a different world.
That's part of really the whole thelema, isn't it? To know and be yourself, however that ends up being. Is that correct, Lynn?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, lots of people propose lots of definitions about what it means to be a thelemite and align yourself with thelema. But the one I always like comes back to the one laid out by Grandmaster Savazius of the OTO. And he says to be a thelemite is to be someone who seeks to know and do their will and accepts the book of the law and whatever that means to them. And I really like that definition because it's more inclusive, but still specific.
Mm.
And so sort of piggyback off of what we were talking about like experiencing emotions. I love that. I love what we're saying about this right now. And, you know, not to get too deep here, but I think I want to say it. And that's, first of all, women are not more emotional than men. Just put that on the table. You know, it's just people's perceptions and that internal bias and bigotry where they project out onto the world, and their selective bias makes them think women are more emotional. But the truth is men have explosive anger issues more than most women I've encountered, all kinds of manifestations of horrible, out of control emotions. But when it comes to crying, to experiencing emotion, whether it's joy through loud laughter or crying or, you know, whatever, however we're experienced in the world, I think that is a reflection of something beautiful, and that's our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, this expression of our humanity is an expression of the divine. And I so believe that we are divine, not in spite of human and being a human, but because we are.
I love that. And that makes me, it reminds me of what I think I'm here to do is become a fully realized human being and not an enlightened being. And it's actually in one of the refuge words in Buddhism. Someone said that is a translation instead of, I don't want to be a goddess. I want to know what it's like to be a fully human being. And I don't think we've done that in this particular cycle of evolution. Maybe we did before in Atlantis and we destroyed it. I don't know. That's another conversation. But you're right. I think that shows our humanity. And I think that's one reason we love animal videos and animals, because they allow us so freely to laugh and cry, and because they seem very comfortable in that part. You know, just their beings are, or at least it touches us so easily, men and women. You're totally right about men, too. I think that I feel bad for men, you know, that men can't express certain emotions even now. It's still not okay to cry, or even though it is okay. And but I think, again, it's wrapped around that it's somehow weak, whether it's women or men, that somehow showing our humanness, our vulnerabilities.
Yeah, vulnerability is seen as a weakness. And I guess if you're in combat, it is. But it's like we're running around constantly fearing being in combat. That's what I feel a lot of the problems are, is that we're constantly on guard against some force that's going to come at us, that's going to destroy us in some way. And while we don't have wild animals anymore necessarily being that threat in most parts of the world, it's almost other humans now becoming that threat. And showing our emotions is like showing our vulnerability, and that's not safe.
That's a really good point. I totally agree with that. And in fact, that was in The Gift of Fear. The Gift of Fear is an odd book because there is a fear that protects, and it comes through intuition. He talks so much about intuition, and he gives the most startling stories of how it protected people. But everything else is not fear. And he, like anxiety and worry, and he talks about, he says, not you should ignore it, but the more you understand the real purpose of fear, you are less fearful, actually. And you walk around safer. And the more you understand that the real fear that's going to protect you from real danger will be there for everyone. It's in us. and it comes through intuition. And it's so interesting to see that in a book like that. I was so excited by that. and that's why, you know, so that it's a protective mechanism. And most people have had at least one or two experiences where something comes over them. And in fact, kind of once you're in the danger, you aren't fearing, you're just doing what the fear tells you to do. You just get calm. Like it's not, and then, you know, he gives the examples of it. And then people that didn't listen to what, you know, they knew was would be safe. And so what you're talking about, Sandra, I agree with you, is that what most of us are doing, you know, running around thinking there's conflict when there really isn't. And we're living mm-hmm. like, you know, in that kind of fearful anxiety worry state when we don't really need to be.
And that wastes a lot of energy. Yeah. A lot of energy that we could actually be using for other things and other work.
Yeah. Yeah, it is about energy a lot of times too. Absolutely. So we're coming a little closer to the end. We have about, you know, a little more than 10 minutes. So I would like to, first of all, see if either of you had anything you wanted to share that you're up to in the near future, whether it's classes or anything else. So let's start with you, Lynn. What are the projects that you're working on? What would you like to share with the audience?
Yeah, so I'm working on a whole bunch of stuff. And thank you for the opportunity to share it with our audience. So I do have a YouTube channel, which I'm always doing stuff on. The focus of my YouTube channel is ceremonial magic, but it's also a focus on women and ceremonial magic in the occult. So I make sure to amplify voices of both academics in our community, as well as female authors. And it has just been so fun. I have a bunch of great interviews and discussions with other women in the community. But also I do a lot of my teaching stuff on there. So I have actual tutorials where I demonstrate different ritual techniques. I break it down for everyone to understand these concepts related to the occult and ceremonial magic and give it a demonstration. So if you like magic and want to know more about women in magic, check out my YouTube channel. I'm always writing and getting published in like little magazines and stuff. You can keep up with me on social media if you would like to purchase some of my stuff I've written and check that out. And I also do teach classes. So I recently taught a class on practical Thelemic magic at Mystic South, which is a convention for magical practitioners held in Atlanta. And I am planning on continuing to teach that class, probably for free, because that's just the kind of person I am. So I guess you can follow me and see when and where I'll be teaching. Of course, donations for whatever organization I'm teaching it for are welcome. And yeah, you can find me on my Patreon if you want a little extra content from me. I post rituals and all kinds of stuff on Patreon, art more than I do elsewhere. So yeah, so what do I got going on? All right, writing, Patreon, classes, you know, and of course I'm very active in my local pagan community as well as the fraternal organization I'm a part of, OTO. So yeah, thanks for having me on. And,
sure.
You know,
no, I love your viewers. Videos. I was going to go back and listen to the one on 777 because I find that book confusing. And I said, I got to go listen to that one.
Yeah, awesome. I'm so glad.
That's a good topic. So, and what about you, Sandra? What are you up to these days?
Pretty much what I've always been up to. So I've got the YouTube channel as well at Mystery Witch School. And on that channel, I do a lot of my teaching too, Wicca, witchcraft, magic, tarot, and a lot of stuff there on shadow work. I've also got another YouTube channel, which is just called Sandra Inman Tapping, and that's where I do EFT, emotional freedom technique, and focus more on changing, how to change the limiting beliefs and perceptions into something that is more helpful. So that's another channel that I'm starting to post on again, because I really am enjoying that one-on-one work that I do with people to just help them get past a lot of the programming that's gone on so that they can actually do what they want to do, be who they want to be, and have a much happier and joyous existence on this planet. So I'm doing a lot of coaching at the moment. I'm also still have the Mystery Witch School Academy, which is my 12-month course in Wicca and witchcraft. And I've just finished doing a live version of the Confident Tarot Reader. So that's teaching people how to read tarot using intuition and storytelling. and that's now gone do it yourself. So that can be, you can enroll in that at any time. It's 7 modules and you can do that in your own space of time too. It's everything's there when you join up and you can take as long or as short a time as you want to work with that material.
And you also have a couple books you've published, is that correct? Or one?
Yes, so I've got the Crafting Your Wiccan Path, which is a book basically about, you know, Wicca 101. And also my first book, which is called Tapping into Abundance. So that's where I was working with a different niche at the time. I was working more with the law of attraction kind of niche and the EFT and the tapping, because it's something I initially wrote back, I think, in 2015, 2016. And so I put that into a book, and that's really about getting rid of those limiting beliefs that are actually stopping you from being able to be successful with your magic. So if you're doing spellcrafting magic, a lot of the time we get in our own way of the success of that, because we've got these energy blocks because of our beliefs about ourselves and the world, or our capacity to have what it is we want to have. Or we simply don't indulge in the behavior that we then need to indulge in to actually make that magic really successful. So that book's really about understanding that the beliefs, like the shame and the guilt and all of those things. And then at the end, it talks more about then the manifestation side of it.
That's a lot. You both are so busy in a good way, and not just a masculine way. It's impressive, you know, overall. This is kind of a funny question I thought of. Tara is one of my main practices, but I kind of do my own thing with her. And the thing I like about her, she has always remained intact. There's different manifestations of Tara, from peaceful to energizing to wrathful. She even sometimes has her own consorts. The only thing I have trouble with is the depiction of her sometimes is just a little too, you know, like male fantasy. If you ask me, that's another thing we didn't talk about. There's a whole like dichotomy of like how the feminine is like super beautiful and sexy, which when I was younger, I liked it. And then really ugly, which is fine too. But there, I realized recently, I kind of want a middle ground at my age.
All the statues of the goddesses these days, they're all super sexy. Even Hecate's now is eternally super sexy.
Oh yeah, I've seen those statues. Well, this is a whole rant I had the back of my mind going on, I didn't get to, and that's this idea of Babylon, who's associated with Dot in the abyss. You know, she's a goddess of death and destruction, annihilation, which with when it comes to annihilation, also sex. But not romance. That's the difference. You know, she's part of this dark divine feminine archetype. And over time, she's been slowly moving into this place of motherhood and love and romance. And and so we're seeing more and more. And I want to say, if your unverified personal gnosis with Babylon is romance and motherliness, that's cool. I want to say that's valid. But for the rest of us who view her in this dark divine feminine space, it's quite shocking. And I just want to put it out there that, you know, when it comes to the feminine divine, we don't need every single feminine divinity to be a mother and to be super sexy and to be love and romance. You know, we have enough goddesses for love and romance. We don't need to make our Babylon also about that, please.
That's true of the Morgan too. The Morgan is like Babylon, and there's some people that want to make her into a sex goddess. And it's not like she's sexual, not sexual, but that is not her main way of being, in a sense that she, and she does help with certain aspects of men and women, certain parts of their psyche. And I agree with you that maybe there's still room to really embrace some of these dark goddesses just for who they are, not trying to push them into another category.
Absolutely. There's so much that the goddesses are representing, all of the different aspects of the feminine. And there's a lot to the feminine. It's not just virgin, mother, crone. It's not just, you know, the whore and the, you know, it's the super sexy. It's there's so much more to the divine feminine that we need to allow the goddesses to be able to represent in the way that they represent it, and not try to sexualize them or turn them into mother figures in that way. It's just it doesn't, it makes me wonder why we're doing that actually in this era.
Yeah, same. Let the dark divine feminine be scary and terrifying
Yeah.
and entrenched in death. Let women be scary.
Yes, because it is part of that aspect. It's part of the polarity of, you've got that super appealing aspect, but you've also got that other aspect too. And we've got life and we've got death, and we need to be able to embrace, the reality of both.
I'm so glad we made room for this at the end. Thank you so much, both of you, for being on the show, Sandra and Lynn. And thank you all for tuning in. Join us next time as we continue to explore the esoteric and the obscure together. Have a great week.